Hi, it's Karen Webster, and welcome to Topic TBD, our weekly show where we talk about a topic that is making news and newsworthy. Today, I'm joined by Eric Glyman, the CEO of Paribus. Eric, thanks for joining me today.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me, Karen.
So the topic du jour is price matching and price adjustments in this really crazy dynamic world of retail, which of course, Eric, is your business. We'll talk a bit more about how you do that in just a bit. But you know, it's an interesting topic because I think matching and adjustments are two different sides of a similar coin. But I want to take matching first because that's where a lot of recent news has been made. American Airlines just came out and said that they now will match the lowest price carrier. eBay is doing the same thing. Of course, Best Buy made news years ago when they said they had to do it in order not to lose out to Amazon. And speaking of Amazon, they claim to have always the lowest prices. And if they don't, they find a way to make that happen. And so I guess my question is, I can see where this is a great thing for the consumer, but why is it such a great thing for the retailer?
That's a great question, right? And in my mind, it goes back to what are the motivations for the often the retailer, airline, you name it, to have these policies in the first place. From my perspective, it is so expensive from a marketing standpoint to either reach a consumer, get them through your doors, get them onto your website. And matching at the heart of it plays an essential role in helping people convert and make sure that that person who you've worked so hard to get through your doors actually checks out and actually gets that dollar right there and through you. So I think a lot of the motivation is about conversion. But I think that the fear that you point out is what if this matching policy maybe has a reasonable effect on conversion but really drops prices a lot. So there is that balance to thread, but I think that there's a lot of value to it.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, it is interesting that, yes, there's an opportunity to convert the consumer, but it strikes me that it also sets up this race to the bottom that only advantages the large guys who have the capacity to do that. So, you know, you can imagine a lot of smaller retailers just not in a position to keep up because they don't have other buckets of revenue to dip into or the breadth of product lines that they carry to make up the difference. That's where I think it can get a little quirky.
I think you're right. And it's the question of, like, what is it that each retailer is competing on, right? I think that if you are selling largely commoditized goods, and the only way in which you're competing is, you know, same SKUs, same product, no better service, and it's just the same thing, then I do see that being a very realistic thing. But if a large part of your store offering is the service, is the superior checkout, proprietary lines, SKUs, and products that you can't find elsewhere, you've got to come to my store to see it. It's really effective in that you're communicating to the customer not only for the items that are commoditized that you can get anywhere, we're going to match the best price, but you can get so much more here. And I think that double message, that double punch is, you know, at its best, I think is where it can serve very well.
Is that what most retailers who are, I guess I should say pros at this, who've been doing it for a while, is that actually how they're using this tool?
I believe so. You know, when you look at where a lot of these policies came from and where they first started appearing, they actually started showing up at stores that were high-end and typically not competing on price. And I think a good example of a store that's had a very generous policy for quite some time is Nordstrom.
Yep.
You know, this is not a low cost, this is not a commodity store. It's very specialized stuff that they, you know, their policy is, you know, anything that we have in our store, if you find a better price elsewhere at the time on sale or up to 2 weeks after you buy it here, we'd be happy to match that price, give you the difference. And I think it's served them very well, especially in keeping, you know, their most loyal customers and helping customers who get to the store convert and check out.
So, you know, a question before we move into price adjustments, which I think is really fascinating, a question on price matching. And this also probably touches on your business too, is it's one thing to say that a business has this policy. It's another one to actually live up
yeah.
to it. So, you know, if the onus is on the consumer to actually go tracking all this stuff, it's great PR, but the chances that I'm going to keep monitoring, you know, airline flights after I've booked my flight from wherever to wherever on American is probably slim to none, because for me that
yeah.
transaction is over. So it takes a lot of work for that to fulfill its promise, but your business is to make sure that it doesn't take work. Therefore, is the hit to the retailer more demonstrable now than it used to be?
Absolutely. I would say in terms of just the prevalence of this in the marketplace, I think it's gone up dramatically, you know, not only in just the offering of the policies and how competitive things have gotten in retail in the past few years, but certainly us too. You know, we're a business that had didn't exist about 2 years ago, and now there are millions of shoppers who are requesting updates automatically daily. And so this as a tool and a place of competition in the marketplace has emerged very rapidly.
So Eric, let's move to price adjustments before I ask how consumers use your app, because I think what we're about to talk about is probably how they use it most, but you'll tell us. Price adjustments. So this is the situation that I often find myself in. I see what I want, I buy it, it's not on sale, and I have the worst timing of all often. You know, a few days later, maybe a week later, there's this sale, and it would have been great to have had the knowledge of that sale the week prior. I might have waited, maybe I wouldn't have waited if it was something I really needed. But it's very hard to get retailers to honor the sale price once something has been ordered, even if it hasn't been delivered yet and they have the ability to go in and adjust the order price. How big is price adjustments to you in keeping satisfied customers of a retailer?
I think it's a great question. So maybe we'll start with like what the concept is and sort of why we started on it. So the concept of a price adjustment is pretty straightforward. It's this guarantee that if you shop here and buy an item, and I, the store, drop my own price a couple days, maybe a few weeks after, you know, you, the customer, can get the difference back, and we'd be happy to do it. And for the longest time, this was a big promise that was there's very little take-up on it because it's just not worth most people's time. You have to, as you point out, know when all the sales are during your busy life. You have to know all the ins and outs of the policies. And if you're lucky to spend all that time and to spot the difference, then you need to figure out, you know, where do I go to get this difference? How do I ask? And if you just look at the value of time, maybe you spend 30 minutes to get $10 back, and there's some probability it works or doesn't work, it just isn't worth it for most people. And for us, when we started looking at the stats of it, I can go into how we kind of stumbled on this way back when, we realized that there's an enormous market where people are leaving, you know, enormous sums of money on the table. And if you could go simply do this automatically, you know, do leverage what computers are really good at, which is, you know, keeping track of one thing, that could be a price or receipt, knowing what the policy is, that doesn't change too often, and then acting, you know, you could make the experience pretty effortless for a customer and to get that automatically. And for us, at the end of it, is especially as we've been scaling, to your question, when this just happens for a customer, that they're saving and getting the best price without having to worry about it, and If they make a miss, money shows it back into their account. They get a lot more comfortable. They frequent that store where they know they're going to get that experience. And they'll often spend more without worrying, like, should I wait for the sale, should I not? And that's been something that's been exciting for us to see.
Yeah, no, it's it can be a bad experience, particularly if, and this has also happened to me, you buy something and literally you haven't even received the merchandise and there's a notification of a sale. And you're like, geez, I mean, 2 days, I timed this poorly. And it you know, if you escalate it enough within a retailer, you often are successful. But you then wonder, why did it take 15 calls to get something that a sales person or a customer service agent should be able to have the parameters to do by looking at the profile of a customer or the spend or whatever, and just provide a better experience.
Absolutely. And I think that's been part of the fun of it. I mean, you know, 2 years ago, we had, I think, you know, a handful of experience through this, and at this point we've, you know, enacted this adjustment for people, you know, more than a million times. And so I'd say that the ease of doing this has gone down, has gone dramatically. It's a much more simpler thing to do. It's often much more codified in policy today. And I think, as you point out, from a customer's perspective, it really should be simple, because you can often return something for 2 weeks, 30 days. You do have the ways to do it. And at that point, you know, going above and doing right by the customer is, it should be simple. And happily, it's getting easier.
Eric, have you noticed retailers adjusting their policies in shrinking the time frames for getting either price adjustments or price matching now that apps like yours make it easier for consumers to get the benefit of that knowledge?
Yeah, I've seen behavior in different directions. Some have made it more generous. Others have, reduced the policy, taken away in certain instances. It somewhat depends on the style in which the stores are competing. And so for stores that tend to have a lot more high-value customers, where they get the majority of the spend, have private and unique SKUs to the store, often making it more generous, where there's a less frequency of shop, because adjustments can go and raise a loyalty for a customer to that store and go from a customer frequency twice a year to maybe three or four times, we think that it's continued to be strong. For other stores where they truly are just competing on price, or they're trying to adjust so frequently, or have some form of price discrimination where it's just one customer gets a particular price, sometimes in order to enable that, policies are getting reduced. So much depends on the retailer and how they're choosing to compete.
Let's talk a little bit about, to provide some context, your app. Now, you're part of Capital One now, and I'd like to get a sense of how this works for consumers, how you get retailers signed up, and what your experience has been in fulfilling the hopes and aspirations of consumers who are looking to get money owed them, or at least how they perceive it.
Absolutely. So, Peribus started as an independent startup out of Brooklyn, and it was a, it's been a very simple app from the beginning. The premise is that we are going to help monitor the price protection guarantees that are made to you at stores and get you the savings automatically. The way it works mechanically is that you can visit our website, www.peribus.co, or download our app, and you simply just link up an email that gets your shopping receipts. It could be your Gmail, your Yahoo, an account you set up just for shopping, whatever. And that's really it. You know, from that point on, we'll go and parse the messages and identify only the messages that are retailer receipts, track what's being bought, go monitor the price based on each store's individual policy, and when you know, there's an opportunity to help you get money back. You know, put in a request, file a claim with the store, whatever the procedure is to get the difference back. And all you needed to do as a customer was sign up. And so we tried to build an experience that was just dead simple. Sign up, we'll take care of the rest.
So do you canvas thousands and thousands of retailers? So could it be anyone, anywhere, or is there a list of retailers that you are plugged into and only monitor for these price adjustments is retailer specific, but I'm thinking price matching.
Yeah, so we, you know, we've certainly expanded the list over time, but it is a list-based approach because we want to make sure that there's high accuracy for both parties in the claims that we're making. And we've chosen to support about 30 of the largest retailers that people are shopping on online is our list.
Got it.
Best Buy, Macy's, Amazon.
Right. I was on your site. You do monitor the big guys. So how does it actually work, and what is the messaging? So, but I want to take it in two different pieces because I'm trying to understand who does the consumer think the hero is? Do they think that you're the hero? I guess in price matching you are, but in price adjustment, where the merchant would probably want to be also the hero for providing this this price adjustment back to your card. How do you share the limelight with the retailer?
Yeah, for us, I think that's been a big part of the journey that, you know, we've learned a lot from Capital One Fund. At the very beginning, a lot of it was just that, hey, we just wanted, you know, it was very much, let's figure this part out, let's do it all independently. It was, you know, there are two founders, and we started it from our living room, and it started that way. As we scaled and started getting bigger, we started to see the value, and Capital One was really a strong proponent of, if you are going, sure, you're sending a request, you're monitoring the price, and you're seeing the opportunities to get people money back, and you know, we did initially capture a lot of that brand value, and we look at what customers are seeing and tweeting daily. It's, you know, along the lines of, wow, like, you know, I had this app, maybe they forgot they signed up for it, and all of a sudden they saved me $75. This is great. And so that was fantastic in helping us grow. But especially now as we're looking and doing more with partner retailers, being able to highlight, you know, not only, hey, this app got you money back, but this store has this great policy. And that this is the store in making and improving both not only in how they're hearing from care of this congestion comes through, but the store themselves. That's been a lot of our effort. Because, you know, let's say that you're buying at Nordstrom and that Nordstrom gives you $40 back. It's true that care of this helped facilitate it, but Nordstrom has designed an entire experience to help not only, you know, put this policy in place, have the agents monitoring, receiving the request, and instantly refund you back and making sure that communication is prime. And so I think that's so important and is something that we are really pushing on.
Yeah, I can see that. So does this, in your case, does this go right back to the card they used?
Typically. So the policies are all up to each individual retailer. At most places, their policy is to say, you know, we'll refund you on your original form of payment. Some also, you know, like to issue a gift card for the difference. Could be some combination or could be up to the customer. But the most common behavior is you get refunded right back on your card.
Yeah, because I would think that from the retailer's perspective, you know, part of the hope is that if you're adjusting the price for a sale, that they get the benefit of what's been saved at some point back in their facility rather than a statement credit that can be used anywhere.
Exactly. I think that some of the savviest players in this have moved towards a gift card type of a model because it does exactly that, right? If a customer isn't frequenting it back, you know, really there isn't, you know, a hard cost other than the cost of service to do it. There is no spend on it. And if they do come back, you know, often with gift cards, people are spending a multiple of what the gift card is actually for. And so you may be figuring out a very clever way to bring the customer back and spend much more. They would often, for some places, it's a lot lower than the cost of reacquisition online. So,
Eric, have you done studies that look at how this affects consumer behavior at those particular merchants? And I'm thinking, you know, matching versus adjustments. Maybe the conclusions are the same, but is there a greater perceived sense of loyalty or shift in spend because consumers aren't worried that they're missing out on things, which is, I think, what every consumer hates. Like, it's one thing to spend the money, but then you don't want to miss out on a deal that happened within whatever window you perceive is the appropriate window for having purchased something and being disadvantaged if it gets reduced.
Yeah, so it's something you think about a lot. And I think it's from a few perspectives, right? From the first part is, like, is, you know, from at the heart of it, like, an adjustment is money that a retailer has already, and it's sending some of that back out or applying credit towards a future order. And so at the very heart of it, if it just was just a reduction in margin, it would make certain things hard. And so from very early on, we wanted to understand, are customers shopping more? And I think one of the most exciting part internally has been as we've gone and we've started to see months and years of data and how it affects consumer behavior coming together, some really exciting impacts where you see loyalty towards a particular store when an adjustment happens. You see spend and you know, the share of wallet of a particular place go up. And those have all been things that we're really excited about. I also think, too, there's a lot of differentiated opportunities that can be created around it. And one of the examples that I think is going to be relevant in just a few weeks from now is Black Friday. You know, marketing budget spend from all of these stores is going to be extraordinarily high. Every year it's been more than the last. And if you have an adjustment policy that's a week, 2 weeks long, you can honestly say to a customer, your Black Friday starts today, and you don't need to go and you know, cut Thanksgiving short, wake up at the crack of dawn, go to a crowded mall, and try to worry about some page that may or may not load on whatever day. Buy the things early on at a relaxed pace, and you'll get the sales automatically. And we think that that's really interesting and differentiating in something that when you can automate things like you can today, is a valuable thing, both for the stores to drive sales and to beat out some of the others, you know, from a timing to get people earlier, and definitely great for customers.
I think that's an interesting concept where you're sort of time shifting the sale cycle without really giving up anything because you're going to offer it anyway, and consumers save the hassle. So they have a different perspective going into the holiday season and shopping. I mean, it takes a pressure point off of a consumer and builds a lot of goodwill with the retailer.
I think so.
So where do you see smaller retailers now? I mean, you track the big guys, you know, 30 or so of the big guys where there's a lot of spend, but then you've got these little guys that, you know, have a bit of a different design, a bit of a different setup, different economics. Are they just kind of left out there hanging?
So I think that this all goes back, adjustments matching, to being able to give customer an assurance that they're going to get a square deal, a good experience, and it's going to be a place. I think what it communicates, even though it's on price, it communicates value. And even if you are a small store with your own, you know, set of SKUs, you only have 100 SKUs, and that's all you stock, I think being able to say to a customer that you will adjust if you find a, you know, a better price elsewhere that you'll match, I think it still has value. we may not be automating it yet, but I do see, and from the behavior we've seen, it's a valuable policy to have in place, and that's part of why I believe it's expanding in the market.
Interesting. So you don't have to necessarily be part of your app to live the spirit of price adjustment and price matching, and savvy retailers should be thinking that. Again, it comes back to, if you don't have the app, you don't have someone who's doing it for you. So it's a value promise that a percentage of people will take you up on, but probably most people won't. But at least it's out there for people to know they can take advantage of if they want.
I just think so, right? It's like, and often it's like where a lot of these policies really started kicking off is, you know, when online sales started to become so prevalent, and it was this practice of showrooming where, you know, especially for small retailers, people are in your store, maybe they see a TV or a shirt, and they're so close to buying it, they love it, and just the worst thing is when you're, you know, for them to walk out and just go buy it somewhere else. When you have an actual, you know, living, like, person there to educate you about the product, tell you about it, and have that not be able to convert. And I just think it's such a valuable, you know, like my first job was as a salesman at an Express. And, you know, being able to have, to arm your salespeople with this tool of, you know, hey, don't worry. And not only is this a product you like, but we can compete on this value, I think is so powerful. And so even for a small store, that promise, I think is very useful in conversion.
Well, this operationalizes what I call my Dave experience at a store that I used to shop regularly until Dave left. Dave was my own personal price adjuster. So he would know when sales were happening. He knew the kind of things I liked to buy. He would squirrel them away for me, and he would ring up my sales on the day of the sale. And I'm sure frustrated a lot of people who wanted the things that he sold away in the back room. But hey, I had the relationship with Dave, and they didn't. So this democratizes the Dave experience, I guess.
That's great. Love it.
So listen, Eric, thanks so much for your time. This was a fascinating conversation about something that I guess on surface sounds like it's not necessarily in the retailer's best interest, but savvy retailers, certainly on the matching and clearly on the adjustments side of things, can use to their advantage to build goodwill and loyalty, which results in repeat purchases. And I think that's really the name of the game in retail these days.
Definitely. I think there's a lot more to it once you get deep into some of the layers down.
Well, I appreciate you taking us a few layers deep, and look forward to an opportunity to go even deeper in a subsequent conversation. Thanks so much for your insights and your time today.
Thank you, Karen. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. And thanks, everyone who listened. Have a great rest of the day and a good weekend. Thank you now.